Luke 5. I can't remember how far we studied. Do you have your notes?
Were we in Luke the last time you were here?
Yes.
You were not.
We got to be verse 2.
Verse 2.
Pressed, there was pressed, and then there was a tangent.
A tangent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John wrote tangent down.
Oh, we took off on the tree chair.
That was, did nobody take notes yesterday?
No, was there yesterday? Nobody took notes yesterday
because
we didn't record yesterday.
Good, that's right.
Because I taught yesterday.
All right.
Oh, I was at surgery, that it didn't go past.
You're
yeah.
Fake surgery.
Fake surgery. Practice. We're going to practice with you and then.
Well, I don't remember what we're just going to, until I feel like talking. And it came to pass that as the people pressed upon him to hear the word of God, he stood by the lake of Gennesaret and saw two ships standing by the lake, but the fishermen were gone out of them and were washing their nets. And he entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's, and prayed him that he would thrust out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught the people out of the ship. Now when he had left speaking, he said unto Simon, launch out into the deep, and let down your nets for a draught. And Simon answering said unto him, Master, we have toiled all the night, and have taken nothing. Nevertheless, at thy word, I will let down the net. Or on the, really what it says, at the grounds of thy word. When they had this done, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and their net break. And they beckoned unto their partners, which were in the other ship, that they should come help them. And they came and filled both the ships, so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. For he was astonished, and all that were with him, at the draught of the fishes which they had taken. And so was James and John, the sons of Zebedee, which were partners with Simon. And Jesus said unto Simon, Fear not, from henceforth thou shalt catch men. And when they had brought their ships to land, they forsook all and followed him. Start in verse 9 or 8. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, Depart from me, for I am a sinful man. Now he uses a particular word for sinful. Hamartolos, and it means he recognized that he was devoted to sin. It didn't mean that he did something wrong. It meant at seeing the mystery of Christ, he saw in himself that he was devoted to sin. In other words, he saw that he was the Antichrist. He was the instead of Christ. There's no way to overemphasize the importance of this. It says he fell down. It means to prostrate oneself before another. Let's look a couple words, places where this is used. Let's go to Mark 8. this one verse, verse 38. Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he cometh in his glory of his Father with the holy angels. Now in the scriptures there are only two generations. There's the generation of Adam and the generation of Christ. That's the only generations that God has any interest in. And here he's talking about the generation of Adam itself. It's the same word. The generation of Adam is devoted to sin. That's all they can do. Remember, sin isn't what you do. Sin is who you are. And this is a critical issue. Until you understand this, all that Christianity can be to you is a philosophy. So, and let's look at one more. Go to Romans 7. Start in verse 7. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? God forbid. Nay, I had not known sin but by the law. For I had not known lust, except the law had said, Thou shalt not covet. But sin, taking occasion by the commandment, wrought in me all manner of concupiscence, for without the law, sin was dead. For I was alive without the law once, but when the commandment came, sin revived, and I died. And the commandment which was ordained to life, I found to be unto death. Now, this is a shocking surprise to him, because his whole life he was devoted to the law. And he thought that the law and the keeping of the law, according to the rules of Judaism, would ordain to life. But here he says this incredible thing. And the commandment which was ordained to life, I found to be death. For sin, taking occasion by the commandment, deceived me, and by it slew me. Wherefore the law is holy, and the commandment holy, and just, and good. Then so was that which is good made death unto me? God forbid. But sin, that it might appear sin, working death in me, by that which is good, that sin by the commandment might become exceeding sinful. And so this exceeding sinful means he recognized here that his being was devoted to sin. That's all it could be, because sin isn't an act. Sin is a person. That's one of the big problems we have in modern Christianity, because they confuse the word trespass and sin. Trespass is what you do. Sin is who you are. And the only way of dealing with who you are, i.e. sin, is your death. And without your death, there can be no Christianity. Everybody, that clear to everybody? Verse 14 again. For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For that which I do, I allow not. In other words, I don't want to do. But what I want to do, that I do not. But what I hate, that I do. If then I do that which I would not, I consent unto the law that it is good. Now this is the crossover. This is the great divide. I don't know about the rest of you, but, and you've heard me talk about this before, but for me, before I was a believer, the only law, the only rule was rules are for when brains run out. And then brains ran out. There's a whole range of people who claim they accepted Jesus as their personal Savior when they were 3 or 5 or 10 or 14. And they've never faced that there's still sin. verse 17. Now then it is I, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. And the sin that dwelleth in you is you, is your mind. The Antichrist, the instead of Christ. And this is the saddest part of all, that you spend the rest of your life after you become a believer trying to use that which is cursed, namely your mind, to gain that which is blessed. Can't happen. All right. That's enough. Let's go back to Luke 5.
That comment you made a while ago about there's no Christianity without your debt, it really boils it down to the nut. It's the question would be, well, what is there? Are you just playing with it, trying to hone in on it, or?
Well, you just, you by definition have to be a hypocrite. God is, you know, God doesn't care what goes on outwardly. He doesn't care what you call yourself. No, he cares about the religion that's going on inside you. That's the only thing he cares about. And that's the only thing he sees. And so if you're still alive, all you can do is act like you're doing it. And that's hypocrisy. It's sad. What's happening is that, I was talking to Glenn earlier, that the only two things that God said he hated, that Christ said he hated, were the doctrine of Balaam and the doctrine of the Nicolaitans. The doctrine of Balaam is mixing the spiritual with government or politics. And the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, Nico is just the Greek word for success, so those that preach success in the name of God. And I promise you, you can say you're not going to be seduced by it, but you will be. Like Arizona. That's private. What?
Not that private anymore.
You're doing what? What are you gelling with now?
Yeah, that's the one with politics, and that seems to be a really hot topic now, huh? You know what I mean? I mean, as far as just the political climate and a lot of the churches using the pulpit to be able to, you know, basically have an agenda of persuade people.
Yeah, I don't care what they do out there. I care what you do in here. You know, we've got everybody from the ultra-liberal to the ultra-right in here. If they've paid attention to their mind, it doesn't matter. It means nothing. Well, it doesn't make any sense to the mind. We are not of this world, period. All right, back to Luke. Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." For he was astonished, and all that were with him, at the draught of the fishes which they had taken. And so also was James and John, the sons of Zebedee, which were partners with Simon. And Jesus said unto Simon, "Fear not, from thenceforth thou shalt catch men." And when they had brought their ships to land, they forsook all and followed him. Let's look at forsook. We'll go back. There's a whole bunch of, remember what we did with Simon? Well, there's a whole bunch of James's, there's a whole bunch of John's, but we don't want to talk about that today. They forsook all. Forsook is aphemi in Greek, and it means you walk away from everything. all is, normally all is the word pas. But here it's hapas, which it's an extreme form of all. They forsook all. Now it's easy to forsake the outside, the goods. But to forsake all means you forsake. Remember Jesus, Paul said, whatsoever was a gain to me, I counted as a loss for Christ. And you forsake all opinions. You forsake all stands. You forsake all until you are truly an empty vessel before him. And that's the problem with both the doctrine of Balaam and the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, is that by definition, those two doctrines don't permit you to forsake all. So anyway, let's look at it. They followed and forsook all and followed him. Followed is a word which means one with the way. So let's go to Matthew 10. Verse 34. Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. And it's one of the least studied scriptures in evangelical Christianity. For I have come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He that findeth his life shall lose it. And he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it. Let's look at, go to Matthew 16. These aren't suggestions, by the way. Now, how can you forsake everything? How can you possibly do that? How can you forsake every opinion that you've ever had? How can you forsake every value system that you've ever had? How can you forsake every stand that you've ever taken? You can only forsake when you see they are of no value. And the only way you can see that they are of no value is to judge them by the standard of truth. There's nothing that you can think about that meets the standard, except one, that meets the standard of truth, which means it doesn't change with time, place, or circumstance. It can't happen. You can't, there's no thought that you can have that can stand against that. There's no thought that you can have that can stand against by one offering you've been perfected forever. There's no thought that can stand against you own all things. I mean, you've got to go to war. And the way you go to war, it's not about with anybody else. You go to war with yourself. And every opinion that you have about life, about morals, about value systems, test it to see. Just take yourself and go to Sudan. In the southern part of Sudan is Christian, and the northern part is Muslim. If you go to the northern, if you're a Christian living in the northern part of Sudan, if you name the name of Christ, they cut off your arm. So go try to preach the prosperity gospel or the political gospel there. Go to the circus in Rome when they were feeding you the lions, and to see if any thought process that you have can stand against that point. Go to the ends of the earth. Expand the pegs of your tent to the very edge of time and space, and I promise you there's no opinion, there's no idea, there's no value system that you can have that is merits giving it you giving it one iota of importance. There's no little behavior pattern. There's no little societal pattern. There's no little mismanners pattern that can stand against if you have the courage to press everything, every thought, every opinion, every idea that you have, take it to the edge of time and space itself and see if it can stand. I promise you it can't. You're just children playing in the streets spiritually. You see what I'm talking about? But somehow, at every generation, you take this incredible mystery of timelessness and we adjust it and we mold it to meet the standards of the time. And it's just sick. What?
Me?
You.
Now it makes sense.
I mean, just think of all the goofy ideas you have. Great. Oh, man, I've got great ideas and great thoughts. Yeah, no, you don't. They're crap. Oh, this is what I believe about truth. Well, what you believe about anything is meaningless compared to if you take it to the end of time. But you sit around like a little kid playing tiddlywinks, giving breath to all this crap that is meaningless. Is it touching anybody? What? Your gears
yeah,
are turning.
No, it's like when you say that, you know, I've heard you say this before. Every time I think I have a good idea or a good plan, it's laughable how it just blows up every time. And yet I'll recreate this whole little thing and
why?
Dress it. No, I'm just saying, but God's faithfulness is blows me away, and his grace and his mercy, because
be careful.
Well, let me finish. I truly believe, and I don't know about this, let's just say it. Even though I'll screw up, like, thinking that I'm going in the right direction, he will constantly cause it to collapse.
So that means you're with these guys in here where he said, shall I continue in sin that grace
right.
may abound?
And then the process goes to a point where it's like, I don't want to massage the idea so long anymore because I feel like I'm out of fellowship with them.
You've left eternity.
Right, because I can feel the restlessness, the irritability, the discontent come in. That there's some, trying to force something, or I'm trying to, you know, it's been a long process. It's still a process, but I'm...
You can't use the word process here. That gives
it?
Breath to time.
Yeah. But he's faithful even when I'm not faithful, right? Right.
How long is his long suffering going to continue?
Ad infinitum. Well,
that's not what it says.
I mean, I think I know what you're trying to say, but I'm just saying that his grace and mercy I don't deserve.
Well, of course not. That's why you're dead.
Right.
Now there's a new life. Your life is hid with him on the mercy seat. You're out of time and space. Except if you give breath or importance to anything in time and space, you've left the mercy seat.
Right.
You've sold your birthright for a pot of porridge.
Right. Right.
So you know that all is vain and empty and fruitless. But then you continue to do it. What does that say to God? What you're doing is you're crucifying the Son of God afresh. You're counting the blood of the covenant as an unholy thing because I'm going to continue in sin so grace may abound. That can't continue. I promise you, what you're getting seduced by is time. We must live our life as if today, this instant, was the judgment seat. That's what the book of Zephaniah is all about. So there has to be a zeal, otherwise you're just like mush. Oh, I'm spiritual cream of wheat. I'm just blah. Anybody know what I'm talking about, Gary?
Not a clue.
You can't do that anymore. If your obedience has been once fulfilled, then you must revenge the disobedience. Oh no, I'm just going to continue doing this because, so I'm going to see whether I'm putting God to the test. Oh, I'm just going to continue massaging my sweet thoughts. I'm going to continue giving breath to my little agenda. I'm going to continue giving importance to my idiotic political opinions. Anybody have any response? This isn't the first time you've heard it. You're looking at me evilly.
I don't seem to have any words.
Good.
Certainly give
me. Luke, Matthew 16, verse 24.
16:24.
Well, let's see what Jesus said to this man who knew that he was the Antichrist. And then let's start in 21. From that time forth, Jesus began to show his disciples, unto his disciples, how that he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and raised again from the dead, raised again the third day. Then Peter sent at him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. But he turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan, for thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. This was the guy. He just, the few verses earlier, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. But his mind was still seduced to savor the things which be of men, to try to change something. And it goes on. Then Jesus said unto his disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself. Now, the word deny is aprodeomai, and it means totally 100% abandon yourself. That's what that word deny means. Abandon yourself. Abandon. You are the temple of the living God. And the rightful owner of your temple is so incredibly, his humility is so incredibly strong that he will not occupy where you are. And so as long as you're dealing with anything, then he's taken the lowest seat. Take up his cross. The only way you take up his cross is for you to recognize that you died with him. 2,000 years ago, the human race died. He was the last Adam. And in doing so, you will follow him. It's in the tense that if you do those things, if you didn't abandon yourself and pick up your cross, then you all automatically follow him. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it, etc., etc. There's no wiggle room. Each of you have heard. You've heard this. So now you're without excuse. Mr. Bojo? Amen? Gary?
I got this thought about forsaking all. And there was a preacher one time was trying to communicate that message, and he had all the men take their wallets and put them in the basket, and the women their purses. And it was a real tactile thing, because your wallet is so precious. It had all your ID and all your keys to your possessions. Just the act of separating yourself from your wallet and your purse penetrated some barriers, but it was forsake all, begin that unraveling of what it is to let it all go.
Did you get your wallet back?
I forsook it.
The guy kept it.
All right.
It was one step beyond the offering plate. Yeah.
We have a custom, and when I remember it, my first timer, do you have anything to say? All right. Take it, big guy.